The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
This is Jabba the Pod.
Right, sons, and welcome to Sci-Fi Wire's Jabba the Pod, our weekly Star Wars podcast where we discuss and celebrate the movies, shows, books, comics, games, and everything else from the galaxy far, far away. Every generation is a legend, every legend is a podcast, and this is ours. I am your host, disgraced former Jedi and Force mystic Brian Silliman. Joining me are the greatest co-host in the galaxy, starting with former Force-sensitive Assassin's Guild member turned droids rights activist, Caitlin Bush.
Hello there.
And the man who lets us record on his starship, the smuggler with a not-so-secret heart of gold, captain of the nearby Hertz Rent-A-Car, and the star binger, Matt Romano.
Greetings!
Also back with us is our protocol droid, Y1RZZ, Human Podcast Relations, also known as Wires, and his new best friend, former midwife droid, Mbop.
Oh, greetings, everyone. Standing by.
Mbop. Mbop.
Yep. That's still a thing.
The gang's all here. Yeah.
Still a thing. Welcome to the first episode of our third season.
Ooh.
Yay!
How the hell did we get this far?
It hasn't even been a year, so let's not pop that Jogan-flavored champagne.
We're close.
Do you think there's frosé but flavored with Jogan fruit in the galaxy far, far away?
There is. Absolutely. Because I've had it.
I was about to start right off with the tough questions. This season, we will be discussing and celebrating every single episode of Star Wars Rebels.
You're rebels, aren't you?
As well as continuing to do whatever we feel like in terms of the galaxy far, far away. We're back aboard the Starbinger, what's left of it. Woo. Anyway, and it's good to be back. I have to say, I didn't realize. I had missed it. The three of us talk often, so it's not like I missed you guys, but I missed saying the words, I guess. It wasn't until you're saying the words that you're like, oh, it's good to be back.
No, it's good. It's surprisingly clean. Surprisingly clean up here.
Yeah. Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah.
That's thanks to Caitlin and myself.
Really? It's suspiciously clean.
Well, the force works really well with cleaning.
Mm, cool. Well, yeah, it's nice.
Is it cool? I don't know. Okay,
this is quality content here.
Yeah, with time for more quality content, and this is just the beginning of this particular tip of the frozen Maluron. But let's get to some news on the march.
News on the march.
We're a little behind the times on this one, but it's still some good, interesting news for fans of The Mandalorian.
Oh, Mandalorian!
And for fans of books. A lot of books about The Mandalorian are coming before season two of The Mandalorian, and this means we're getting the Art of The Mandalorian season one is one, a big art book, which is going to be great. Matt, I know you're really excited because we're also getting a visual, that famous
visional
word. Visual dictionary, Mandalorian season one from Pablo Hidalgo. So that's right, the visual dictionary installment of the week segment will return when I have that book.
Very exciting.
And it'll still be covering Rise of Skywalker.
Horrifying.
Is it horrifying? Oh, Carabast.
Mando on Exegol.
Nice try. But the cool thing is there's also going to be an adult novel by Adam Christopher. That we don't know anything about this other than the cover just says The Mandalorian on it. So I don't think it's going to be a novelized adaptation of the first season. I would hope that it takes place in the same time period with presumably the Mando. Mm-hmm. And who know, either before or after, who knows? But it's a novel in canon that takes place in the Mando world. So that's really cool.
That is fun. I hope that it's a bridge between season one and season two. I hope that that's a thing.
Yeah, or maybe, you know, earlier exploits. Like, here's some other bounties that he collected. Here's one particular, or like his first job with a Grief Karga, or the first time he met Mark Boone Jr. or something
That'd be fun. I think mostly I just really want Din Djarin's like internal monologue on the Yoda baby.
That's what's going to be. I mean, Din Djarin's internal monologue period is going to be fascinating.
Incredible.
And so if that's going to be a part of it, it's going to be really interesting to read. Also, there's going to be a lot of young adult tie-in books galore. There's a lot. YA, children's. There's probably a kid's book along the lines of C-3PO Hates Sand. My favorite Star Wars kids book of all time. And there's also going to be comic tie-ins, both Marvel and IDW. And they're slowly starting to ramp those back up again. So, once again, if you're a fan of The Mandalorian and a fan of books, well, this is a marriage made for you. Anyway, so without further ado, we're going to begin our dive into Star Wars Rebels.
You're Rebels, aren't you?
Wires, if you'd be so kind as to let us know what episodes are on the docket for today, as Caitlin just gave out the biggest yawn I've ever seen.
I'm really tired. I'm sorry.
No, I have to call it out. It was hilarious. I'm like, let's go. And you're like, it's like, doesn't care at all. Oh, I know, it's just tired. It's these people don't sleep, everybody. Okay, Wires, give it to us.
As per your orders, we start at the beginning with the Rebel Shorts, go into the pilot episode, and then discuss the first season up and through the episode Gathering Forces. When discussing multiple episodes in this format, you are allowed to give special attention to one in particular, and this week, it is naturally the pilot episode Spark of Rebellion, sometimes broken up into parts 1 and 2.
Okay, understood. Everything we're about to discuss is canon, but for big editions, we'll fire off our trusty cannon when I remember to do so. If we have hot takes along the way, we'll sound the hot take alarm. And if anything really blew our minds the first time we watched or blew them all over again on rewatch, then we will let loose with a seismic mind charge. Now, these episodes have all been out for a while, so we will dispense with the spoiler klaxon. If you want to watch along, they are all available on Disney+. The shorts are also on there. They're just in a different section. They're, well, not different section, but different thing from the regular show. So they're not, like, with the episodes itself. They're not hard to find in the Star Wars section. Anyway, but if you haven't seen any of it, we do recommend you watch the show before listening to this, because, Caitlin, there is, what is there?
There's a clear order in which you should watch Star Wars Rebels and then listen to our podcast.
So if we're all set, let's punch it.
Show me what you have on your Rebels.
Okay, Star Wars Rebels, Season 1, Part 1. We're going to start with the shorts. I'm going to run down these really quick because we got a lot to cover. We got The Machine and the Ghost is the first short, and it introduces Kanan Jarrus, played by Freddie Prinze Jr., Harrison Dula, Vanessa Marshall, and C-110P, a.k.a. Chopper, their droid, designed based on the original R2-D2 Macquarie painting, also introduces their ship, the Ghost. Kanan will find out is a former Padawan who survived Order 66. Hera is the daughter of Twi'lek revolutionary Cham Syndulla, who he met in the Clone Wars. And the playful will-they-won't-they dynamic with them starts immediately in this short. And the ship known as Kanara, not in canon, we'll get to this in a later section of the show, but it doesn't necessarily start here, but it certainly in terms of animation starts here. And already I remember I saw this and I started shipping them big time and continue to.
Are they not? I totally thought that they were like actually a thing. Like I thought they were a couple.
Yeah, they pretty much are.
Okay.
That's the thing. Yeah. It's like it's not outright said, but she calls him love like every
episode.
In my
mind I was like, "Oh, you guys are married."
And say things like make mom and dad proud. And it's like just, well, because I want to see it. I want to see a makeout session. We don't necessarily see it. At least in the first season, we don't see it. I want hot and heavy animated Star Wars smut, everybody.
Yeah, yeah. Close those blaster doors. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, my goodness.
Anyway. Then we have Art Attack. Introduced Sabine Wren, played by Tia Sirkar. I mean, this is the first thing I ever heard her in, really. I wasn't aware of her work before this, but since, of course, she's had her own show for a while. She was great on the Good Place as Vicky. She's been in all kinds of stuff since. But she plays Sabine Wren, a Mando who we'll find out was formerly studied at the Imperial Academy before defecting. She's also an artist, and she's an artist with paint as well as with her explosives. And she's an expert with explosives, and she likes mixing the art and explosives to the point where the blast is good, but it's how the blast looks that really matters. Then we have Entanglement, introduces Gera Zeb Aurelius, a Lasat, played by Steve Blum, who is known for many, many roles in voiceover, but probably most famous for playing Spike in the English dub of Cowboy Bebop. This is mostly introduces him, as well as an Imperial pilot named Baron Valen Rudor, who is recurring, and the rebels are a constant thorn in his side. Interesting, the look of the Lasat, his species, is another old Macquarie design. It's the original one of Chewbacca and for Wookiees. And so now they've taken that design and made them a whole new species, and that pays off in the pilot with a pretty funny joke about Lasats and Wookiees. The short also officially brings in the planet Lothal, who you could say is an important planet in terms of the show. Matt Romano, would you agree?
I would Lothal. Say it's very important.
Lothal's important to Star Wars. Yeah,
it's pretty important. I mean, they're there every
most
day.
Of the show takes most of the show takes place on this planet. not all of it, but a lot of it. And it's like I said, I just said, hugely pivotal. Okay, great. Then the last short, Property of Ezra Bridger, introduces Lothrat Street Rat. He don't buy that. This is just the beginning of that.
Really
Orphan
good.
Ezra Bridger.
You're Lothal gonna love this native. Guy. Sorry.
Oh my god.
He has a penchant for stealing Imperial helmets, just like Matt Romano.
Yeah, that's fair.
That's what?
That's fair. That's true. Yes.
That's
oh,
true.
Yeah,
accurate
okay.
statement. Yep.
It's true. And also Baron Rudor is back, right? Back-to-back shorts. And he also gets, you know, knocked around. And we get our first taste of Ezra's energy slingshot. Which I admit I didn't love at the time, and I still kind of don't.
I don't.
It throws me off a lot.
Yeah,
I don't love the energy slingshot. And if it gives if anybody's watching this for the first time, this is not much of a spoiler. It doesn't last past the episodes we're talking about much longer.
Yeah.
So for all of those characters and the ghost and everything I just said, fire the cannon. Okay, so just based on the shorts and those characters, you know, we now kind of know our main band of rebels, our main cast of characters. Caitlin Bush, since this is the first time you're watching this show, I want to know, in terms of the characters, who do you like so far? Who's standing out as a possible favorite?
Hera is standing out as my possible favorite right now. She's the most capable person there, and she's very level-headed, and she's the mom of the group, and I adore her with all of my heart.
Yep. Absolutely. I have to ask, Ezra Bridger, is he in any way, shape, or form on a list for, you know what I'm going to ask?
Yeah.
Child or trash child?
He is the very first episode, and we'll get into it. As soon as he pops up and starts causing trouble, I was like, oh no, you're my horrible son, aren't you?
Really?
You're my horrible son. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. See, it's interesting.
Also, here's the thing too, is that it even though I've never watched the show, I'm very familiar with all of these characters just because I spend so much time on the internet and within Star Wars fandom. And I have an understanding of who these characters are going in anyway. And I always kind of, I know that there's so much love for Ezra, and I know that there's a reason for that. So immediately I'm just like, oh, nope. Yep. I get it. He's a pain in the ass, and I love him.
So you're not going in cold. You're going in warm because you've already, you know the characters and the general, well, because we cover it all the time. So there's going to be, you're already familiar. Matt Romano, you're on rewatch now.
Yes.
Differences like in terms of favorite characters from when you're watching now based on when you originally watched, or what's the whole deal there? What's the deal?
Great, great question, Brian. I'll say that my favorite is still Kanan after all this, I think. I still think he's my favorite. But actually, after rewatching these shorts, you know who my favorite character is? The ghost. I think the ship.
I'm not surprised. Yeah, the ship that has a little ship in the back of it,
it's
Phantom.
Perfect.
That can detach.
Yep.
Yeah.
We should get one.
I meant to ask you about that. Yeah, we should get one of those.
We should get one of those.
Because since we have a big space where our podcast studio used to be.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So But yeah, I was going to ask you as our resident ship enthusiast, yes. What you thought of the Ghost. And the Ghost is a really cool ship.
It's a really cool ship. I mean, it's definitely like inspired by the Millennium Falcon, like no doubt. Even like the gun turrets and everything, and the general
shape of it. And
it breaks down a lot less.
Yes, it does.
I mean, this is a big thing that everyone always says. Well, who's the better pilot, Han Solo or Harrison Dula? Is like a big point of contention, and I'm like, I am not taking sides in that one.
Right? Why do we have to take sides? Why can't we just say they're both great pilots? That's great.
Yeah. They're both fantastic. Yeah. It's but I mean, in terms of ships, it's nothing's ever going to beat the Millennium Falcon.
No.
But Millennium Falcon aside, I it's hard to think of a ship in Star Wars that is cooler than the Ghost. I mean, I'd probably still put it above the Razor Crest, if I'm being honest.
Mm, you know, it's
certainly more capable. Yep. I don't know. I'm a. We'll see what the Razor Crest does in season two.
Yeah,
but we haven't been with the Razor Crest very long.
Exactly.
Onus is on you, Razor Crest.
But in terms of like general Star Wars aesthetic, like they really nail the Ghost. And I remember being so worried about this show because when they canceled Clone Wars and they were like, oh, here's Star Wars Rebels, and it looked like the animation was a little different. It looked a little more kiddie, you know. But
and it is. Granted,
it was
also
on.
And it was not on Cartoon Network. It was on Disney. Disney XD.
XD.
I remember hearing that every 6 seconds. I'm like, oh, another ad for this thing I don't care about. Oh my god.
And it's still, here's the thing, it worked because it's still with you all these years later.
It did. And it's like
that
and
is
I'm like,
advertising.
I'm not even watching
right
it on Disney XD anymore, yet every time it cuts to black, I still hear that damn noise in my head.
Yeah.
It's a different experience watching it now, you know, on lovely Disney Plus and without all that crap.
Yeah.
With all that Kark and Criff. I have to say it's interesting because when first watched, I had similar reservations and I liked it from the beginning. Like it wasn't love at first sight.
Yeah.
It wasn't like Ambush with Clone Wars where it was like, oh my God. Because also there was nothing to, it had big shoes to fill.
Huge
shoes. I think an important thing to say.
And I mean, from the first moment, there's no familiar characters, there's no really like, because they pull you in with Clone Wars because you have Anakin, you have Obi-Wan, you have like all of these people who
you automatically
associate with Star Wars. Yeah,
you have Zero the Hutt, famous character from the
famous
original trilogy.
Star Wars character.
Yeah,
but you nailed it because you nailed it. Everything about it was like kind of scary. It's like, whoa, there's a new Jedi, but the Jedi are dead. That doesn't make sense. And like, oh, there's a Mandalorian and she paints and she does graffiti. And you're like, what? Like, what's going on here? Like, what is
her hair's crazy?
I remember at the time somebody, one of the Star Wars Illuminati, I forget which one, was like, it's like the focus group came up with a cool character. It's like, who do we like? Graffiti, skateboards, Mandos, put them in a character.
Slingshots.
Yeah. And the thing is, it's like, but Sabine's kind of my, aside from Hera, because I love Hera, I mean, Sabine is fascinating to me because I know where she goes and she kind of, it ends up being her show as much as Ezra's. But it's not fair. This wasn't the case when I first watched it, but watching it now, I love Agent Callus so much because I know where he goes. Yep. And I know that arc is one of the best on the entire series.
I agree.
And this series would eventually live up to Clone Wars. And there's a special, we'll talk about what points it really hit, but it's different. And at the beginning, I just wasn't in on Ezra. I'll admit I liked everybody, but I wasn't sold on him.
Right.
And this is the thing. It was like, well, what's going to happen? One of them's going to die. They can't. It was the same thing with Ahsoka. It's like they can't be around. And the thing is, how is the show going to get rid of them? Except we just kind of been through that with Ahsoka. And I got on Ezra's side a little. It's just sometimes, it's not even the voice. It's sometimes his emotions are is so exaggerated. Like, was there ever any doubt?
Right.
And it's like, it's just so pronounced. I
mean, that's kind of like, how the whole show is too, though. It's very, it's like
down.
Over animated. It's still like, I had to get past it while I was watching. I was like, this is much more of a children's show than Clone Wars ever was. Like, we talked about it all the time when talking about Clone Wars. Clone Wars is very like all ages entertainment. Like, even though it's a cartoon, it's still like, it's a little bit more mature. It has all of these very large, very complicated themes within it. And I'm sure as we get into it, Rebels will as well, because it's Star Wars and you can't avoid that in Star Wars. But the animation style, and I think, like you said, Brian, the movements of the characters are so much more exaggerated. There's not as much subtlety.
Yeah.
And it really differentiates it from Clone Wars.
Much like Clone Wars, it grows up like Clone Wars did. It grows up really, really quickly, too. It grows up a lot faster. And also, I think we have to keep in mind that, I mean, this was a thing at the time, but it stands out now, even as somebody who already loves this show Silver and cherishes this show. We can't really compare it to Clone Wars Season 7. Because that's nuance on a whole nother level. And I'm not saying you guys are doing that. I'm like, I have to stop doing that. I mean, but it sucks you in, and the story sucks you in, and it's just seeing it bigger and brighter and more beautiful than ever before. It's kind of, that stops being a thing. But anyway, we'll go right into the pilot episode, Spark of Rebellion, on the planet Anaxes. Not really. although Anaxes does come up in the episodes we're going to be talking about, which is interesting. Now, it's interesting. We begin with a scene in this pilot that was not in the original when this pilot was originally shown. The scene that, as it begins with Vader and the Inquisitor, was not originally there. Mm. I remember they showed it when they replayed it like a couple weeks later. They're like, and now with a whole new opening scene. And this is, and they're pretty much, it has Vader in it. It has James Earl Jones. He's Vader. You like him, right? Do you like Vader? And tune in to Disney XD and watch. Actually, they don't do that, but they're like, watch it again, because we got James Earl Jones as Vader.
I like Vader.
And it's like, hey, I like Vader. And it's like, and the Grand Inquisitor from the end, it's like, hey, he look cool. It's like, well, let's watch it again. All right. I don't know why they did that, aside from maybe it's like trying to get people to rewatch with this added scene. But in every version after that, on DVD or streaming or whatever, this scene is there. And it starts right with, we don't start with, aside from Vader, obviously, we start with ships that we know, with Star Destroyers coming into, like, surrounding our screen from top and bottom. And one thing that's interesting in watching this right after, rewatching this rather, right after the finale of Clone Wars, is it totally evoked that downed Republic cruiser on the planet at the end of Clone Wars.
Yep.
And now it's like, it's that same kind of angled of the shot, except this time there's three of them and they're Imperial. And it's like, things have changed.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think that was intentional at all, but it's really interesting where a transition from that, because that image is just burned into my brain now from the end of Clone Wars. It's like, I'll never forget that.
Yeah.
And instantly going into this is the next Star Wars animated thing I'm watching. It's like, the death of one thing, the beginning of another. It's insane how well it worked.
And I mean, Star Destroyers too. I mean, just like that imagery. That's the first imagery that you ever get in a Star Wars movie. Like that. Star Destroyer is just like that shape and that kind of looming presence. That's pure Star Wars right there. So.
Yep.
Yeah. It's because between that, the Corellian Corvette, which we don't get in the pilot, but we get in the second episode, and then. Things like musical cues. There's so many musical cues right out of A New Hope or Return of the Jedi. It's like there, but a lot right out of New Hope, especially the. It's like the little when Luke asks Obi-Wan in his hut for the first time about what the Force is. This little riff.
And it's the same thing.
The first time Ezra sees Kanan, it's like his Ezra Tingle.
and that's and what it's like, called now.
Yeah. Maybe I should take one jump ahead of Kanan. And then, sorry, his hair. It's the hair.
It's there.
Prince Valiant. Anyway, but it's, but there's also things like, whoops, jostle the microphone here. Mm. There's a lot of jostling microphones. The lightsabers intentionally are thin.
Yeah, I don't like that. I don't like that.
Well, I figured. I'm like, I'm going to say this man's going to be like, yeah. I dislike. It's like, but it's that was intentional to make them thinner because it's more like in New Hope, they are thin.
They look more like swords than like.
Yeah.
Like staffs.
Blades. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, I'm not fat shaming lightsabers here, but it's they've grown more. The shaft has grown thicker over time.
Yes, it has.
That is.
Go ahead, try and follow that.
That is an accurate statement.
Anyway, news on the march.
Glad that we're talking about a children's show right now.
anyway, so we, like I said, we begin with, and it's great starting now, anyway, the way it is now with James Earl Jones as Vader giving orders to the Grand Inquisitor. This is the first time we knew that Inquisitors were a thing. And for all we knew, there was only this one, but we'd come to find out there are more. Voiced by Jason Isaacs. Come on. If you want to get someone to voice your villain or play your villain, you don't get better. You do not get better.
That's true.
And he's a Powan, like the Utapau, the chairman of Utapau with thousands of battle droids from Revenge of the Sith, that guy. And this whole Sand Vader's thing is hunt down the children of the Force and whoever remaining Jedi might be training them. So that kind of sets up kind of the certainly this season that has a lot to do and sets up the Inquisitor, the Grand Inquisitor, who's the big bad of season one. On rewatch, how well this whole thing flows right after the end of, despite what I said about animation quality or whatever else, just the basic imagery and how it's directed and everything dovetailing out of the end of Clone Wars and now into this blew my mind at how well that works now. Mind blown! And then we go to Lothal and the tower, Lonely Tower, and Ezra on his Lonely Tower with his hair, his luxurious blue hair, blowing in the wind with his head blowing in the wind. And he sees a Star Destroyer coming over Rogue One style, although technically this came first. And he jumps on a speeder and he goes to town and causes some trouble with, can you beat this name? Commandant Cumberlane Oresco.
That's a name.
That's it.
Matt, you're going to name one of your kids Cumberlane, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. At least like a first or middle name, you know.
It's like in third grade, it's like, Mr. Cumberlane Romano, if you would approach the blackboard and put your phone away, please.
He eats the pudding? No, sorry.
Yeah. Well, okay. And then he's friends with Taskmaster Miles Grint, and they're both jerks. And Ezra's as I already have made it clear, he's totally pulling Aladdin moves, and this whole thing in this town in Lothal is right out of it. We immediately get Jogan Fruit in the show.
Yeah, man.
It's like, this is where I'm like, oh, we're back home. Okay. Even though they say Yogan in this first thing, I'm like, no, that's not how you pronounce it, show. Even though am I about to tell Dave Filoni how to pronounce a fruit that he created.
There's different dialects on different planets, and they just say
it's true.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Yeah.
And the ever-present propaganda posters are all over the place, and I really love those. We've already said we have the first twinge of the Force when he sees Kanan, and Ezra screws up a heist with the Ghost crew in progress, and there's this repeated, he keeps saying, who are these guys? And they keep saying, who is this kid? And even the Gaudel at one point is like, who is that kid? And I want, like, Zero the Hutt to pop his head and goes, who are these people?
If there were a bigger kind of just narrative thing of hitting kids over the head with, this is your hero, kids, this is your hero, pay attention to him.
Yeah. And it's like, we've seen it's like, this is for anybody who hasn't seen the featurettes about who the characters are in the show, which I remember they did them one at a time. It's like, here are your heroes. And that was a big deal because it was like, here are the new characters. And especially because they weren't legacy characters. So I remember seeing the one for Kanan the first time. I was like, oh, he looks cool. I like that. Matt, do you like that half armor thing he's got?
I do like the half armor thing. You know, I always wonder, I have to question what armor does. Like, does he just protecting his shoulder, you know, but it's cool.
Well, it's a pauldron.
Oh, sure.
No, that's what it is.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure, right? Caitlin, it's a pauldron? Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah, see, Caitlin agrees.
Great.
read a book, Matt.
To the point where I don't like it when he ditches it. When he gets his new look, he takes that off. I don't, spoilers, for costume design and animation. This is the Kanan look I like the most.
Yeah.
And he's kind of a cowboy Jedi because he's got a blaster and a lightsaber. Much like myself, except without the cowboy or blaster. So there's this whole chase scene going on, a lot of speeder bike sounds that also put you right give you that Star Wars feeling. Ezra ends up on the Ghost where we meet Hera, who immediately, again, in her second line, calls Kanan love. I'm like, oh, yeah, you guys are doing it, like, right now.
I'd like 100%, like, from the first second, I was like, I didn't even question the fact that they were a couple, that they just are together.
Yeah.
Like, in my mind, I was like, oh, they're married.
It's I think because I was being set up by and we're going to get to this on a later segment, a book where they meet each other for the first time. And it was not, it didn't like, he's into her, but it's like she's kind of playing it cool. So it was not
she's better
set that they were
nice.
That they were, I mean, yeah, she's better than all of them, really.
Yeah.
Anyway, on the escape, he gives her a line, and I'm like, I really wanted instant cut to Caitlin's first reaction on hearing this line, where he says, "A little less attitude and a little more altitude." Caitlin Bush, I'd like you to try and sell that line right now with everything you have.
Oh my God.
It's like you're in the middle of a firefight. The stakes are high. Stakes, high stakes. We got to escape. And I'm fiddling around and I'm giving you attitude. I'm sassing you.
Hey, a little less attitude and a little more altitude, Brian.
Perfect. Yeah,
I'm
perfect.
Not going to lie. That's pretty good. that's very good. I was expecting it to be good, and it was better than I was even expecting. Okay. Ezra's never been off planet before. He's never been to space. It's kind of like a Rey moment, except it's everything Ezra says, he's not, it's familiar beats to Rey. But he doesn't have that innate selflessness that Rey has.
Yeah.
He's kind of always still, you know, very thief and out for himself because everyone else is. And right. He doesn't understand that people would exist that just serve others. He doesn't get it.
Yeah.
And he has all these lines with stick your neck out for people you don't know who would do who does that.
Yeah.
And Hera says, we do. She's the one who continually is the one giving him these lessons. And she pretty much wants to adopt him right off the bat.
Oh yeah, she's like, he's, she looks at him, she's like,
and
you're my son.
And Kanan's
now.
Like, no, nope. And she's like, yeah. And I'm like, well, to be fair to Kanan, you just met this kid.
To harp on the Rey thing for a second, it was something that I was thinking about when I was watching these episodes. And the pure difference between them, like slight spoiler, even though we'll be talking about it in the next like 15 minutes, is that Rey always held on to the hope that her family would come back for her.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Ezra's whole line about how, oh, if I had believed that they would come back for me, if I hadn't just given up and gone out on my own, then I wouldn't have survived. Well, turns out you can survive while you're waiting for your family to come back and having hope for that. And maybe it makes you a little bit kinder, too,
yeah,
from the get-go.
It's true. It's more of a mystery with Ezra's parents. It's like he doesn't know. Well, neither does Rey. It's interesting how the two things play out. It's like very different.
Right.
We do find out what happened to Ezra's family, and it's not like he doesn't care.
He put up a little shield around it.
He did. He definitely did. And I mean, it's also interesting because this came first. This was kind of, there was no Rey to compare it to. But also, weirdly enough, his parents end up both being Palpatine clones. It's weird.
But you know,
Matt Romano?
Ezra is another, like, you can't be a Star Wars hero unless something's happened to your parents. You've never left your planet before.
Yep.
Like, he very much, you know, you mean Jyn Erso, Luke Skywalker, Anakin Skywalker. Like, these are all people that's, you know.
Kitster.
Exactly.
Imperial Royal Guard.
You have to have you have to have daddy issues to
gotta
be
daddy
a
issues.
Star Wars hero.
Yeah.
You do. That's just, that's how that works.
Well, I mean, Leia Organa's parents get blown up.
Exactly.
So,
yeah, Leia doesn't have parents.
We don't really
and
see
her
Ezra
dad is Darth Vader.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, her real dad is Bail Organa, but her biological dad is Darth Vader. Yeah. It's too much Vader in her. He doesn't really have a twin son's moment, but as we've talked about before, it's like there's a cost. There's a difference between thinking you're a hero and pretending you're a hero. And he doesn't really have a moment where he plays the hero or pretends he's a hero. He's just surviving.
Yeah.
He's scrapping. And unlike scavenging ships from a, you know, ship graveyard, he's just stealing things from people and fleecing Jogan fruit from Gottles that he just got off from Cumberlane and Resco. So, you know. Classic Star Wars stuff. So we cut to and he instantly also has a big big brother little brother thing going on with Zeb instantly. The amazing Gara Zeb Aurelius, who has my new favorite, well, it's not my new favorite, but at the time it was my new favorite Star Wars curse word, Karabast.
Yeah.
Which I will be saying from now on all the time. I realized I'd never said it on the podcast before.
Yeah, it's weird to me.
Yeah. So they escape, and we cut to Agent Callis of the ISB, the Imperial Security Bureau, also known at this point as Old Mutton Chop, and he knows that this cell has hit them before, and he's on it. And he is voiced by David Oyelowo, who is known now for starring in Selma, and he's in a lot of big things. I mean, he was a big get for this show, but is just so perfect for this. I saw him in, like, back in 2000 in a play called Orinoco at the RSC when I was in London. He was amazing in that. So years later, where I pop up and I hear he's in a Star Wars animated show, I was like, what? It's like, how is it that same guy? And then he was in Selma. I was like, is this Agent Callis? It's like, and he's so much more than that, but it's he brings such a great gravitas to that part. And I mean, that character would
rumble.
Not be...
And there's a thing. The best facial hair in the galaxy, hands down.
Well, and it continues to evolve as we go on. It evolves into something that became famously known as Hot Callis as the series went on, because he slowly gets hot.
Oh,
personally,
my.
I think he's hot right
that
now.
That makes me uncomfortable.
Stop. This makes you uncomfortable. The callus is going to get hot. I'm so confused as to where we were before this. Anyway, Zeb, Sabine, and Ezra take some of the stolen supplies to a shanty shack village called Tarkin Town. And Amelia, I'm like, wow, okay, that's going to go. Yeah, it's a kid show at this point, but that's going to go right over the kids' heads into like anyone's like political, super political, historical reference right there. Yeah. And here's where I have to give a huge, Matt, you'll love this.
Can't wait.
A huge, man, was I wrong. I was so insanely wrong.
Oh.
If you remember, I made a big deal, I believe it was chapter 7 of The Mandalorian, when Moff Gideon first arrives.
Yes.
That they finally said the word Moff on screen.
Yep.
That it had never been said. To be fair, it still hadn't been said in live action, but I don't think I clarified. I said no anime. I forget, but I think I said no animated show, no nothing, never said Moff. And then I screamed and fired the cannon until it almost broke.
Oh my God.
It was a moment. Remember,
yep,
serious moment.
Yeah.
I was wrong. I was completely wrong, because Sabine Wren right here says, Tarkin, she says his name Tarkin Town, and she says named after Grand Moff Tarkin. I heard that. I didn't remember it. I saw it on rewatch, and I said, this is the first thing I thought. I said, oh, man.
Time to recalibrate the canon. Oh, man. Again.
We can't suck things back into the canon. And it's, unfortunately, I also shot it off a million times. But
you did.
I mean, we were different people back then. It was a different galaxy.
You can keep telling yourself that.
Look at what's happened. Oh, Caitlin, look, we started and then lost a cantina since then.
Can we replay that for a second? Just can we add that audio of you firing the cannon like a madman?
Yes, that's good. Let's play the moment. It's going to happen this episode. Someone's finally going to say Moff out loud, and it was Herzog who said it. He had the honor of being the first time, 2019, since 1977, that the word Moff was said out loud. Fire that cannon again! Again! More!
Oh, whoa, all
more.
Right, hey, Brian! Everyone calm down.
I think you got him. But in fairness to me, live action is still true.
Yeah,
animation, this came first, and for all I know, it's said 1,000 times in Empire Strikes Back, and I just missed it. I don't know.
Yeah.
So, fans, I'm sorry. Caitlin, I'm sorry. Matt, I'm not apologizing to you.
This is enough. Don't worry. Just knowing you were wrong is enough.
I just gotta accept that. There's no comeback. Anyway, Muff Watch continues. Hera and Kanan trade guns to a crime lord, Sicatro Visago, a Deveronian, in exchange for intro on Wookiee prisoners. Ezra then goes on the ghost himself, finds Kanan's quarters, takes out a holocron, and just steals it.
Yep.
Like, that's nice.
Why not? He's like, oh, this is shiny.
Yeah, it's like, is this a Jogan fruit? No. Can I eat it? No. Am I going to take it? Yeah. Pockets it. Then he finds a lightsaber, and he just sparks that bad boy up.
It's Kanan a miracle and Hera that he didn't just shish kebab himself.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's
like
what Kanan says.
There's like a 50-50 chance that he would have had it turned the wrong way.
Like the wrong end. It would have been so easy. It's like, oh, what's this?
I mean, it's very similar. It's very similar to like the moment in A New Hope when Luke's just like staring into the barrel of the lightsaber. Yeah, it's like,
is this on? How do you turn this? Oh, not like that. The other way. Yeah. An elegant weapon for a more. But it's interesting because the first thing Kanan says when he comes in is something like, "Careful, you're cut your arm off." I'm like, that's exactly what I would do if lightsabers were real. I'd be like, awesome, I've got one dead in two seconds. Okay, yeah, you're right. And we immediately, this is where we see that they're thinner. Lightsabers, they're thinner now, and we see that they're thinner to match A New Hope. And Kanan says something, he's like, now we wait to Hera. So it's clear that there's some kind of test going on. That we don't really know about. They go and they intercept a cargo ship full of Wookiees. This transport is a Gozanti class ship. It's kind of really an Imperial freighter. And I mention it because we're going to see a lot of this ship on Rebels.
Yes.
But it was first seen in the background of Phantom Menace and Mos Espa scenes. Mm. It popped up a couple times on The Clone Wars, usually as a Separatist vehicle. And a few, you'll be shocked to learn, were in Lando's Armada in Rise of Skywalker.
Yeah.
But the old Gozanti, it's you know, it's what Caitlin, it's you've always been saying it's one of your favorite ships.
It's a classic Star Wars ship, man. It's the first ship that I think of when I think of Star Wars ships.
One of those big dumb Star Wars ships.
Yeah, man.
It sounds just like you. That sounds like something you'd say. Totally. So to get aboard, they have to pretend they have a Wookiee, and Zeb pretends to be a Wookiee, and they say he's a rare hairless Wookiee. And Zeb gives a bad Wookiee impression, and it's hilarious, because if you know the behind, it's like, well, that's the original Macquarie, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't last long, and Zeb really likes the feel of a stormtrooper's helmet smashing in his hands.
Buckets.
As he says it. Is it weird because the bucket heads, Carabast? Is it weird that the Imperial designs, they go on these ships and the Imperial design is comforting to me?
No.
No, I like it.
It's very familiar.
Yeah.
It's very familiar.
It's familiar. There's a whole familiarity to all of this. But it's a setup. There are no Wookiees there. It's a setup by Callus. The comms go down and Hera's like, you got to go on board and help them. And she has probably what I think is the line of, one of the best, if not the best line in all the episodes we're covering today. If all you do is fight for your own life, then your life is worth nothing. What do you stand for? What's that line? If you fall for nothing, what do you stand? No.
If you stand for nothing, what will you fall for?
Yeah, it's literally the same one. And she's right. It's she's really acting as the conscience for everyone, but certainly Ezra. And then so he goes on board and helps them. They waste no time and right in the pilot, a no gravity fight scene. Animation loves to do it. Live action, not so much. Zeb then leaves Ezra behind. He feels bad about it, but he's like, well, to save everybody, we're just gonna leave you. And they're pissed because. Hera, you can tell Hera's pissed because she says his full name. Callus talks with Ezra. Ezra says his name is Jabba the Hutt. And I'm like, oh, that's almost the name of our show. They're not. And he says, they're not going to come for me. People don't do that. And I just, my only thing after that line I wrote is Ezra's dark and friendless world. I don't know what that means. There's no other thing there. That's just what it says.
He's so sad and alone.
Yeah, it's like, people don't do that. Nobody's going to come. Nobody cares. But he still has the holocron, which he opens without even really trying, and it is Obi-Wan Kenobi's message of warning from Revenge of the Sith, voiced by good friend of the show, James Arnold Taylor.
It's very comforting.
Yeah, very, very comforting. Ezra escapes, pretending he's just by loudly saying that he's Palpatine is his uncle. It's really weird. Stupid stormtroopers here. It's the one thing
is like peak dumb stormtroopers.
Yeah, all of the Imperials are so inept aside from Callus. And the cool thing is, well, certainly they're going to get comeuppance, and they do eventually. It's like these guys don't stick around.
Well, and general note just about like the one problem when you do live action Star Wars and it's episodic, it's like it's okay in the movies when the stormtroopers or the Empire are dumb like every once in a while. But then you start to see how stupid the Empire is in shows like this.
Consistently.
Yeah.
Consistently dumb.
Aside from some of the, and that's why on this show it's great when eventually someone like Tarkin comes in and just says, okay, a lot of mistakes are happening and we're not going to fire you. I'm just going to kill you. Gone. You're gone.
Well, and they constantly reinforce how big the Empire is, and that's why like they get away with this so much times. That's why they're able to like sneak on Star Destroyers every single week. You know, it's like they just play up the fact that they're so large that adds to their ineptitude. You know.
And there's a lot of corruption in the Imperial ranks.
Yes,
too.
A lot of corruption.
Yeah. And a lot of Mugen Tea going around, and Mugen so much slaving. Every now and then, the show will give you a really formidable stormtrooper that puts up a real fight. That like on a chase on a tank or something like that. It's like, wow, okay, he's actually proving a challenge. So that's nice. Every now and then. Ezra escapes. The Ghost crew arrives to save him. Ezra has found out that the Wookiees are bound for Kessel, and their escape is covered by Sabine using explosive paint, which I just love that whole thing. We go to Kessel, and this is the first time we saw Kessel. This I have already apologized I was wrong about, that this was the first time technically in anything we saw what Kessel looked like. It would then go on to see it in Solo, and I like that it matches. I like that it looks... that when we see it in Solo, it looks pretty close to what we see here. I will say I have to give a knock. You guys know I don't like complaining or giving knocks or whatever else, but I have to say the Wookiees look terrible.
They
look awful.
They look like
people who are wearing they look like sheet ghosts, but they're brown.
That have been in the microwave for about at least a minute. They scare me.
They're
nightmare creatures, and it's all. And I mean, you're doing this in the premiere. It's like you've changed your animation thing. Even Clone Wars waited 3 seasons before they did Wookiees
to get something that familiar in there.
Yeah, and it just works with Clone Wars. I mean, so here it's like. And I don't think we ever see Wookiees again on this show. I think that maybe they realize they're like, okay, no, that's not
again. Doesn't work with our animation style.
It's early on, so I don't like saying it, but I have to say it. It's like I forgot how I'm like, wow, they're frightening to me, the way these things look.
I got a very holiday special vibe off of them.
Yeah. Holiday special vibe. I got like if a murderer had a cereal brand, this would be the mascot on the front. But anyway, the crew then goes up against Callus, and Kanan has the line. It's like he's like, Ezra says, you're gonna tell me the secret? He says, kid, I'm gonna let everyone in on the secret. And he has this great moment of putting his lightsaber together and coming out as a Jedi against Callus, and Callus's line of focus your fire on the Jedi.
Yeah.
And it's like they're back. It's like, no. It's like, and this, you can see the stormtroopers like, oh, man.
Damn it.
It's that battle droid thing. It's like, we're all going to die, aren't we?
Roger.
So Ezra goes to save a Wookiee child named Kitwar. I have to say that the Wookiee kid is cute, but still.
Yeah, it's because they give it the big eyes. You can't really go wrong with
baby,
that.
Baby Star
But
Wars.
He's no Gungi. He's no Gungi.
No.
He's no Gungi. Kitwar, you're not Gungi, so stop trying to be.
Stop trying to be Gungi. Stop trying to make Gungi happen.
Yeah. Callus is on him, but then the ghost rises with Kanan standing on top with his lightsaber drawn. And I loved that the first time I saw it. I loved it again now. And I'm going to say for that moment, combined with Kanan's coming out as a Jedi with his lightsaber, whatever, mind blown. Because I love it. And it gives me chills every time. And they escape. Callus is left dangling on a bridge with a stormtrooper. The stormtrooper says, first Jedi I've ever seen, sir. Callus kicks him off the bridge. And it's totally Grievous with the battle droids.
Yep.
It's like, I didn't remember this moment. But it's not something he really does again. It's not like Callus does this every couple episodes and it's a recurring bit. But I was like, wow, that was cold. And also, it's like, that's not a droid. That's a person in there. Not a clone. That's a recruit, but Callus doesn't care.
Yeah.
They drop Ezra off. He goes back to his lonely tower of everyone hating each other.
His lonely tower of shame.
Yeah.
His lonely tower. But after swiping Kanan's lightsaber for like no reason, and he gives the open holocron back, so he proves that he'd opened it, and Hera says, well, he passed the test. So Kanan shows up at the tower almost immediately, briefly explains the Force, and then offers to train him. Gives him some speeches like, you can stay here and be selfish, or you can come and learn the Force and be of service.
Well, he gives the line of what the Force is.
Yeah, a brief version, a truncated version of it.
Yeah.
And then there's this really nice montage of Kanan listening to Obi-Wan's full message, which we've never heard the full message before. So it's nice to hear, especially read by James Arnold Taylor. And I just love the line, "A new hope will emerge." It's a very Tolkien line in terms of, you know, the theme of day will come again.
It is.
And that's where Ezra comes back, joins the crew, like, shocker. And then we end with Kallus calming the Grand Inquisitor to tell him what happened. And the Grand Inquisitor is very thankful that he called and he's now aware. So for everything, for Agent Kallus, Sacacho Vizago, Kessel, the Holocron, Kanan training, Ezra, Inquisitors, everything we just said, fire the cannon, cannon! Before we move on to the rest, so many other episodes, as quick as possible. thoughts on this pilot, Caitlin Bush?
It's fun. By the time I finished it, I still wasn't like, you know, I was enjoying it. It's Star Wars. It's fun. But it took me a while. And I think it wasn't until episode 5 where I was like, okay, I'm vibing with this. I'm liking this. So yeah. Some part of me is maybe I shouldn't go back.
Groove.
Yeah. I got into the groove, but the pilot was good, but it did not immediately suck me in.
It was the same for me when I first watched. I'm like, I liked it, but I didn't love it until a certain there was a moment for me as well that we're actually going to get to in this show where I was like, okay, now I'm fully on board. Now I'm all in. But on rewatch, it plays so well on rewatch, the pilot, because this is a show, and we were talking about this before the episode, is that everything pays off. Everything set up in this pilot pays off, and now that I have the of hindsight, knowing how it pays off and knowing that little grace notes have huge payoffs later and knowing how far these characters go, I had such a great time watching again. It had been a while since I watched this pilot. If I'm going to throw on Rebels, I don't throw on the pilot.
No.
Matt Romano, on the from your thoughts rewatching from the rewatch perspective on the pilot. Do you similar to me or not at all?
Yeah, no, similar to you, because I think they beat you over the head with it in the pilot, but it really comes clear in these next few episodes that they are a family unit. You know, it's really like a family show. You have the mother, your father, the older sister, the bratty brother, the jock brother, the funny dog.
The crazy droid cat.
Yeah,
they always say Chopper's like a cat.
Yeah. I like seeing the origins of that, knowing how far they go with that. But despite falling in love with the series in a few more episodes, I mean, that moment when they're like, focus your fire on the Jedi, and you're like, that was really
it
cool.
It sticks out. And you immediately is like, okay, I don't care what the Wookiees look like. That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I still say those Wookiees are nightmare fuel, though. They probably try their best. I know, and I'm sure they're aware of it. This is not a knock on the animators or anything. It's just
they're terrifying.
If Padawans fans, listeners, if anyone out there loves the look of these Wookiees, then let me know. Tell me I'm wrong, please.
What about the look of the Wookiees?
Oh, don't bring back bad memories. You're talking about our Phantom Menace, Matt.
Oh, no.
Come on. Okay, so we're going to go move on to Droids in Distress. I love this episode. I'm going to say right off the bat, this is a follow-up episode. This is such a good one because there's so much little Star Wars references entangled in this thing. I love this. It introduces Lothal Minister Tua and introduces C-3PO and R2-D2, who are there translating for her with this Aqualish. And they are shipping disruptor weapons, and their whole job is to get in the middle and disrupt this shipment. Zeb is pissed off when they find out what they're shipping because they were the same disruptor weapons used to wipe out his people. Kallus gets entangled with them here again, and things get personal between him and Zeb because Kallus says he was the one that ordered them to use the weapons on Lasan. He's responsible for all this. He was there, and he also uses a bow rifle, which is the weapon of the Lasat honor guard that he pulled off one of them himself, and Zeb is not having it, and him and Kallus start their huge arc. It really starts here when they go at it in a really well-choreographed fight with the two of them staff to staff.
Yeah.
When watching it, I'm like, wow, this is really good. I mean, this is where it's... I have to say, is even though they're kind of starting over with the animation style, they start at a higher level than Clone Wars did.
They absolutely did.
Like you wouldn't see a fight like this in the Clone Wars theatrical movie, for example.
Right.
Right.
No.
And you would also, but you're not going to see me in Rebels now, are you? So there's a trade-off.
But so this matchup is not over by a long shot. Ezra saves Zeb using the Force on purpose. This time gives him a big Force push, and he's like, wow.
Whoa.
And it turns out the whole time it was... It wasn't really a translating mission. It was a secret mission that, again, only R2 knew about and 3PO didn't, sent by Bail Organa, who to gather intel. But also at the end, Bail has this great scene with Kanan. And this is awesome, seeing the blockade runner hallway again in animation. Yeah. Anytime we see that hallway, it's like, and Bail says... pays Kanan, and he says, "This a simple gesture of kindness can fill a galaxy with hope." What Kanan kind of double takes, and Kanan's like, "What cult did you just walk out of?"
That's a Jedi line, right?
Yeah, exactly. He's like, and Bail's like, "Oh, is it? I don't know."
He just walks away.
I have nothing to do with them. I wouldn't know.
And then Bail turns around and goes, "Wink."
Yeah, it's like right at the Kanan says, "Oh, I'd never tease a senator," and then they roll around in the grass. No, but it's because Kanan doesn't know, and Bail's just sussing him out because he has to be so careful about where he puts his trust.
Yeah.
That's why Fulcrum, as we find out, this mysterious message is coming. Is we don't know. It's we don't know who Fulcrum is. They have to be so secretive. If anyone found out where Bail Organa's actual, and this is the interesting thing with the books that fill out his backstory, his Brea's story and Leia's story, is the levels of intrigue he and Mon Mothma go through, creating a whole false narrative of an affair with Mon Mothma and Brea and Bail being upset about it. And that's their cover, where really they're all in the Rebel Alliance. And it's like young Leia bought that for a while and was upset and then goes to Crait and is like, oh, okay, no. So he's, not just going to trust this cowboy Jedi voiced by Freddie Prinze Jr., but he gets R2's been slyly gathering intel the whole time, and at the end he learns a little bit more of him. Is that the last we'll see of Bail Organa on this show? No, it is not. Also fun, I have to say this, the droid piloting the shuttle as they go to the planet Garel, which is a planet we'll see again. This droid is the same make as the droid RX-24, aka Rex, who piloted the ship in the original Star Tours ride, who is also now, that same droid is now a fixture at Oga's Cantina at Galaxy's Edge. Just on that original Star Tours ride, he was voiced by Paul Reubens, and he is voiced by Paul Reubens in this episode.
Whoa!
That was just such a cool deep cut, and it just, that's why I love the whole shuttle ride to Garel sequence, because it makes me feel like I'm back in Florida as a kid about to go on or on Star Tours, and it makes me feel so good. This is the only appearance of C-3PO and R2-D2 on this entire series. They are not seen again, but there is a fun moment where, because Chopper, as I've said, is kind of based off the original R2 designs. There's a droid that they continually use but pops up for the first time in this episode that's based on the original C-3PO painting that ended up getting changed a lot. And he's on this shuttle as well. And when the droids get pushed to the back, there's a moment of C-3PO and R2 against this random protocol droid and Chopper. And it's like the original Macquarie designs meeting the real designs. And it's just so hilarious for everybody. Isn't that great?
Yeah, it's so funny.
Isn't that just great intel? Well, I've got to say, for RX-24 and pretty much Star Tours being canon, even though it kind of already was thanks to Lando's Armada, fire the cannon! And screw it, just because I love it so much. Mind blown. Okay, then we go to Fight or Flight. This is Hera forces Zeb and Ezra to bond by going shopping.
This is the episode wherein, you guys remember that post of the mom who had the get along shirt, and she just put the two brother and sister in it. Yeah. Like a very large shirt. That's what this episode is.
Yeah, except the shirt is the TIE fighter that they're stuck in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is, it's like they had to make the cockpit. They looked at the cockpits of the original thing. It's like, we got to make these bigger because there's no way two people can fit in the cockpit.
Let alone Zeb
and another person. Movies.
Yeah.
And also it's like, we'll put a hatch on the top. But Caitlin, you pull tricks like this all the time when you send Matt and I out shopping.
Absolutely. Where it's like, you guys sometimes need to learn how to get along.
May Lou run fruit on this planet.
Yeah, you guys always have to learn to get along sometimes.
Oh, God.
I mean, and we do, but sometimes Matt's impossible.
Well, and sometimes the cockpit is too small. You know, it's just too, not a lot of room on the ship. I don't know.
So, okay. But my biggest takeaway, weirdly enough, from this episode, as I've already said a million times, is Meluron fruit, which you think is a one-off, but it's the new Jogan fruit. Not the Jogan fruit goes away, but Meluron's continue to be a running gag for the whole rest of this series, as well as it's featured prominently in one challenge every week on Jedi Temple Challenge. Features Meluron kids jumping for catch the Meluron fruit. So I find that really entertaining. Also, Baron Rudor is in this episode and gets harassed some more. He's not having a good time. We go on to Rise of the Old Masters. I'd say this is probably the most important episode so far. And this is big. Kanan and Ezra are struggling with Ezra's Jedi training. Ezra doesn't think he's good enough. Kanan thinks he's a horrible teacher. They get intel that says Luminara Unduli might be alive. And I got duped by this too, because I thought so at the time. We briefly see her on Kashyyyk during Order 66, but we never see her get snuffed. Right. So I'm like, is she alive? That would be cool if they brought her onto the show.
I had a moment where I was going through my brain.
Were you taken in a little bit?
Yeah, I was going through my brain a little bit. I was like, does her name get pop up a lot in reference to the show? And I couldn't remember. But you know, we learn. No.
Yeah, we live and learn. And they go to break her out of a place called Stygian Prime. That's notable, because that's where, among other instances of being in canon, that is where Palpatine threw Maul after the events of the Lawless, and the character Gar Saxon broke him out of it in the Son of Dathomir comic prior to his appearances in season 7 of the Clone Wars. So that features again, or before that or after it, I don't know, but it's a thing. It's the first time it turns out it's a bait from the Grand Inquisitor. The remains of Luminara are there, and that's all. It's like her bones, his carcass.
Yeah,
it's really creepy.
Yeah, something was going on there.
It's dark. Very, very it's creepy. Hera eventually rescues them using the Phantom, the small little ship. Kanan had hoped that Luminara was alive mostly because he thinks she would be a better master to Ezra, but I just want to say, it's like, have you met Barriss? It's like, not necessarily. It's like, because look what happened to Barriss. But this confirms that Luminara is dead. We still don't know where or how, theoretically on Kashyyyk. But this has another one of my favorite things in this episode is they're both Kanan and Ezra are having an issue wrapping their minds around the line, do or do not, there is no try.
Yes, yeah.
And by the end of it, they realize, Kanan realizes at least his take on it. He's like, we may fail, but there is no try. I'm like, so that's pivotal. It's like, you do or you fail. It's like, but the try, the attempt, there's still something to that. It's not like you say, well, there is no try, so I'm not even going to bother. I'm not even going to bother working on it or trying to change or working on things. The try does matter. The attempt does matter, because we're all still working on it, you know, aren't we? So I think that is huge. It's like, we may fail, but there is no try. So it's like that illuminated that in a whole new way, because I always had issues, not issues with that line, but I'm like, that's kind of an impossible standard.
Right.
But
black and white there.
Well, yeah, I remember watching that episode for the first time. I was like, don't you dare, you know, try to put that line down. And then by the end of the episode, it's like, oh, okay, great. Well, no. They made it good again.
Yeah, they just don't get it. And by the end, it's like, oh, you look at it in a whole new way. And let's not forget, this is Dave Filoni here.
Yeah, he
so,
knows.
So, you know, he would know. I took that line and we did it and I'm wearing this hat. We go to Breaking Ranks. Ezra goes undercover at the Imperial Academy on Lothal and meets Zare Leonis and Jai Kel. Shady stuff is going on there, especially when the Inquisitor visits. Zare Leonis' story is interesting. It's a whole other thing. He's looking for his lost sister Dara, and more of his tale is told in young adult books that spun out of Rebels, and I've read a couple of them, though not all of them. His story never finishes on the show itself. I'm surprised they didn't use him more. I believe we do see him briefly again, and we do see Jai Kel again. But it's cool always seeing, like, the Academy stuff. It reminded me of Clone Cadets. We go to Out of Darkness. This is Hera and Sabine get some alone time. They take the Phantom to an asteroid base and get a message from Fulcrum. This one really, at the time, I remember lit the fire of, who is Fulcrum? I remember people started asking Dave. He's like, I'm just happy you care. He's like, he was just pleased that people people cared who Fulcrum was. And there's a specific symbol on a crate that somebody's like, well, that symbol looks like this thing that this character has on their head all the time.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, that's a reach. I'm like, that is such a reach. And at the time, I was like, that can't be true. And it turns out, nope, it's not true. As for who is Fulcrum, well, we're not going to spoil it now, are we, in case you're watching for the first time. Anyway, but when you find out, you're going to like the way you look. I guarantee it. There's a little history of Sabine in here, former Imperial, but still a lot of secrecy and trust issues. The base also introduces Furnox, which are, as Kayla would say, more big, silly Star Wars monsters.
Stupid Star Wars monsters. I love them so much.
Yep.
And fun fact, this is Fort Anaxes. And why Anaxes might sound familiar is because this base, it's a former Clone Wars base, this Clone Wars porn all around. Not porn, but, you know, designs and everything. It's where the Bad Batch arc took place. It's the same base. Just somehow between that and now, it blew apart and an asteroid, this base is still on the asteroid.
And now it's been taken over by creepy dark cave cats.
Demon monsters.
That were already on the planet, because if you look at Bad Batch, they threw a couple of them in the background when they're on the planet Anaxes. So these Furnox are there. Yeah, isn't that cool? So for Anaxes blowing apart, Furnox and all that stuff, cannon, fire! Moving on to Empire Day, which is a day that they celebrate. This is the 15th anniversary of the Empire coming to be. Sounds like a terrible day where they play the Imperial theme in a major key. There's some fun on Lothal where the rebels are, you know, screwing some stuff up. We meet old Joe, who's an Authorian with a translator voiced by Dee Bradley Baker. And he has a bar where he's forced to play Imperial holo recordings. And he also has a Republic gunship hanging over the bar, the front of it, which I love that. I think that's cool. They ruin things for this parade by destroying a prototype fighter, which was set to be flown by Baron Rudor. So Minister Tua is up in arms. They ruined her big thing. They find a Rodian with the Lobot cybernetics in Ezra's old home, and we find out he volunteered to get these cybernetics to get Imperial data and everything else, but it was too much and he started going nuts. They get this guy named Sebo off Lothal and they have a chase with the Inquisitor, and Sebo says he knows what happened to the Bridgers. Cannon for Empire Day being a thing, as well as more that's going on with the Lobot stuff. Fire! And then Gathering Darkness picks right up on that with Sebo, says he failed to save Ezra's parents, which that's his big... I remember watching this the first time, I'm like, that's the payoff? I'm like, that's not much. Ezra's pissed. Kanan pulls a full cool move, detaching the Phantom from the Ghost while in hyperspace. They end up back at Fort Anaxes, and Ezra forgives Sebo, but the imps come storming in. And this whole thing is they've been training Ezra to connect to creatures this whole time, and they finally manage to do it with the Furnox until the Inquisitor arrives. He injures Kanan, and Ezra has a huge dark side moment and connects to a giant Furnox that rises up and scares the Inquisitor off. And that was the moment where this show hooked me. I was like, that moment right there. I was sold on Ezra. I was sold on the show. Also because this is like set up to be a one-off base and monsters two episodes before this, and yet they go back there and it's this huge payoff with this. It's something that the show would do a lot, and it's illustrating it right here. If you thought that episode before was with these random monsters was not important, it is. And it ends with Sabine giving Ezra a picture of his parents that she found in that home. So for that Furnox moment and everything and all of this tying back, one final mind blown. Any further thoughts on all of these episodes? Caitlin Bush.
No, I'm really excited to keep watching now that I've kind of gotten into it. Looking forward to the latter half of the season and seeing where my horrible son and his merry gang of rebels go.
Is he he's a trash son, would you say?
He's my horrible son.
Horrible son. Okay.
Yeah.
That's a new strata. I haven't heard that one.
It's more loving than trash son.
Well, I'm a trash son. Any episode that we just talked about, is there a favorite among those for you?
I would say I really did like Rise of the Old Masters, just because I like Ezra and Kanan kind of having it out, and the miscommunication, the classic miscommunication of Ezra being like, oh, you are trying to pawn me off because you don't think I'm worthy of you. And Kanan's like, no, I'm not worthy of you. Like, so.
Yeah. I also like the line. It's like, I don't want a good master. I want you, or some kind of spin on that line. And at the time, I remember that one really hit home for a lot of people. That got a lot of people on board, that episode. Yeah. Matt Romano, any favorites before we close out? Favorites of these?
No, I think, I mean, it's tough because, like, Out of Darkness and Gathering Forces are very much like you have the mother-daughter episode, then you have the father-son episode. I really love everything that takes place in those two episodes because it's just great for the character development. Gathering Forces is probably my favorite. But I also will mention there's not many Mandalorian connections here, but that troop transport that the Empire uses.
Oh, yes.
Used to be a toy,
yeah.
And it's in Mandalorian. So there's your
connection for this episode. We've covered it on the show before. It's the troop transport toy they made just so kids could have a toy to put their figures in. Dave Filoni turned into a, they knew they'd need a tank that wasn't a walker. He turned it into a thing for the exclusively for this show. And then it popped up in live action on The Mandalorian. I couldn't believe it when he brought it into live action. Yeah. But yeah, that's a good call. That's in Fight or Flight, I believe, is the first time we see that. Yeah. For me, it's probably, I always liked Empire Day, probably Droids in Distress, though, on rewatch. I'm like, that just gives me a warm feeling. Anyway, that is a lot that we just blew right through. But tune in next week for the end of the entire rest of season one. With that, we're going to go to break. But stick right there. We'll be back in just a few moments.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait till you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
We're back, and now it's time to take a look at some galactic points of interest.
Good news has come to the citizens of Lothal.
The big word on the galactic points of interest board this week is merchandising.
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 Merchandising. Merchandising.
And of course, surprise, surprise, it's all based around baby. As we now call it. Even though we call it Yoda Baby, some people call it Baby Yoda. Lucasfilm wants to call it the child, but Bryce Dallas Howard calls it Baby. Much ado about Baby. I gotta weave in this small personal anecdote that is totally involves Baby. This is right after we went on hiatus. I get a call at 10:30 at night from my mom. And that means when that happens, I pick up the phone and I immediately say, I don't say hello. I say, either what's wrong or what happened.
Right.
Because it's like it's usually an extreme circumstance.
I mean, if your mother calls you at 10:30 at night, that's what that is.
Yeah. And it's not like, and we had already talked like that day, even though these days I'm like, I call and I'm like, did we already talk? I don't remember because days are bleeding together. But she's like, oh no, everything's fine. And she's like, my mom watches a lot of QVC. She sometimes says, and it makes me sad when she says this, like, they're like my friends. And I'm like, Mom, they're not your friends. But she's like, they have Yoda. They have Baby Yoda is on QVC. And I'm like, wait, the actual puppet the character is real. Like, are they selling it? What? And she's like, no, it's going to be on the show later. It's so cute. And she loves Yoda Baby. Now, my mom doesn't know anything about Star Wars. She doesn't care about Star Wars. But this is how we've talked about before. You know, when something has become a pulp culture phenomenon, the way I gauge it is when my mother starts asking about it and then asks for it for Christmas or something. Yeah. That's what happened with Baby Groot, except this is like times 10.
Yeah.
My mom has never seen that movie, yet she has a Baby Groot on her shelf. It's weird. So she's like, they did, but she's like, they didn't even get to the segment yet on QVC. They were just talking about how the segment was coming up, and they showed it, and they had sold thousands of them. Thousands. Wow. It's like this went. I'm like, when they get to the segment, they're going to sell out completely. And this is the plush. Then she's like, I'm like, well, is it the, of course, I'm like, is it the official plush? Which one are we talking about? Is it the animatronic? Is it the black series? Is it the thing? And she doesn't know what any of that is.
Of course
it was
not.
It's like if I was on the phone with you, Matt, you'd be like, no, it's not black series. It's the one with the soup. It's like, no, it comes with frog. She's like, it looks like it's in some kind of egg carton. I'm like, okay, it's in its pram. It's in the floating pram. Okay, that's the official one. And she has no idea what I'm saying. And so, she's like, well, I really want to. She's like, this would be a nice Christmas gift. I'm like, just buy it. It's like, just buy it. But here's the thing. If you buy it and it comes, she's like, oh, it's so cute. She's going off about how adorable this is. I'm like, couple things. Now you're going to have to listen to me talk about. Now you realize this is not actually Yoda. I'm like, this is a completely different character. And I'm like, she's like, do I need to know all this? I'm like, if you're going to buy it, yes. And I'm like, we don't know. And she's like, well, what's its name? It's like, we don't know yet. And I'm like, and if you think you're going to have this for Christmas and not have to watch a little of the show that involves Yoda Baby, then think again. So, and she's like, okay.
Look at you just harassing your mother, like not letting her enjoy it.
This is a gift. It's like she doesn't just get the toy without having to, you know, having to watch
suffer a little bit.
Is that the
little
rules?
Of baby.
Is that the rules?
I was watching baby suffering. Anyway, yes, those are the rules. This is my hard guide to gift giving.
Seriously. Well, nobody knew who Boba Fett was, but everybody wanted that action figure. You
have to understand the significance of the gift to be able to give the gift.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why, Matt, you should really hope that I never write you a poem as a gift.
Oh,
And yes, that was a threat.
Oh, that was anyway. Going to say, that is a threat.
Okay, whoa. Got me.
A poetry threat.
You
go to the beach, they would kick copies of Byron in his face.
Wow, wow.
Anyway, now moving on to merchandising that's not about my mother or QVC. I just thought that was hilarious. And I'm like, we've truly gotten there. And yes, she did order one. It's on its way. And I said, don't open it yet. It's for Christmas. It's for Life Day. But now, what's an even bigger sign that something has hit big? It's when it becomes the breakfast cereal. And that's right. Yoda Baby breakfast cereal. Now, they're not even calling it Baby Yoda breakfast cereal or Yoda Baby or even the child. Can you imagine if it's like child breakfast cereal?
That was my first question. It's like Childos. Yeah.
It's like, is it for children? Is it made out of children? It's like there's problems.
The world
there.
May never know.
Yeah.
But so I'm looking at the box art and it doesn't say, all it says is Star Wars General Mills, General Grievous's little thought of brother in Star Wars canon, interestingly enough, General Mills. He doesn't feature in canon a lot, but he's also Kalish and he's in there a little less robotics. He could still be around. We don't know. Wow, that was such a bad joke. Anyway, but it only says Star Wars on it and it has Baby Yoda right there and it's described as a fruity cereal, which immediately turns me off. It's like little circles of cereal and then marshmallows, green marshmallows that are his head. It could just be Yoda, the marshmallows, but it's the baby on there. So my question is what they're going to end up calling it is like, who knows, but
Mandos.
Mando's not the cereal. He's not involved in this cereal.
Well, maybe he is.
Doesn't
maybe
matter.
He is in the background.
Is the baby Yoda show.
Yeah.
Wow.
Maybe he's
shots fired. Yeah. Says, sorry for you, Din Djarin. But it's
so
like
so says Baby Yoda, the internet.
Baby Yoda show the cereal. But me and one of our colleagues were talking about other novelty cereals, and it's like I remember in '89 the Batman cereal.
Yep, Batman
which
cereal.
Pretty much just Captain Crunch, but kind of shaped like bats, and it was terrible.
I had Ghostbusters cereal. I remember very clearly.
Yep. Oh my god!
Did you have? Are you old enough? Did you have C-3PO's?
I think we're all too old. I think we're too old. Yeah.
But you can still buy. There's another at the very line of C-3PO's. Another big yawn.
Oh my god! I'm sorry.
Caitlin is so over. No, you're just over it. It's fine. It's tedious. I'm with you.
So tired.
You know what you need? A big bowl of Yoda baby cereal.
Yoda baby cereal.
A bowl of Yoda babies.
Does Yoda just fill up his prawn with?
Potter yourself a bowl of Yoda babies.
He's just eating it out of his bucket, as you know.
You can't have my strawberry Snickers.
Yoda baby O's are for Yoda baby.
I mean, so we'll see what we'll have to admit. Initially, I'm like, oh, it's a fruity cereal. I don't like fruity. I generally don't like cereal or eating it in front of other people, but that's a whole other thing. But
you'd be online at eating your, with a spoon in front of people.
When it comes out, we're going to, I mean, dry is fine, but when it involves the milk or whatever, then it's one of my weird things.
Yikes.
I can handle it if I want to. When it comes out, we're going to have to buy it and we're going to have a taste test.
Yep.
Of Yoda Babies, the breakfast cereal. Anyway, that's going to do it for that scintillating point of galactic interest. And now we're going to have a new segment, a brief new segment. Welcome to Brian's Book Club.
The Sacred Jedi Texts.
Ooh. Now, I'm doing this segment not out of vanity, although partially.
Partially.
It's because people, a lot of listeners, Padawans, what have you, want to know more information about books. That we talk about Star Wars books and publishing, sometimes comics that we talk about on the show. So what better reason to create an entire segment on the show about that? And the pick this week, so we're not going to do it every week, but it's like whenever there's a book that ties in directly to the main discussion. And this week there's a great one. The book is called A New Dawn by John Jackson Miller. And here's why it's interesting. This was the first book that was released after the extended universe books became legends. This is the first book where they said everything's canon now, book, comics, everything. So this is the very first one that was released. And so it was a kind of a must buy at the time because it's like, oh, this is actual canon now. And also because it's about rebels. It sets up Kanan Jarrus. It sets up, it's the first meeting of Kanan and Hera and the first time Kanan steps on board the Ghost. So it's important for that as well, and it came out before Rebels started. Kind of, I think the shorts had been on, but the show itself had not started yet. I could be wrong about that, and based on my track record in this episode, I probably am. But it's not. It's easy to spot. It's got Kanan and Hera right there on the cover. It also introduces Rey Sloane to the canon. It's pretty much the first time she was in a story, so it's important for that as a great intro to her. It's got a great villain, a really interesting central planet. It definitely will make you ship Kanera if you didn't before, because Kanan, they're like, it's, this is less PG than, not that it's pure smut, but it's a little less G than the show, because Kanan sees Hera for the first time and is in love immediately. And like love, lust, all of it. It's like he just wants to break him off a piece of that Twi'lek. And that was disgusting what
That's
I just said.
I'm
sorry to Twi'leks everywhere. Matt, to your wife.
My wife.
Twi'lek wife, I'm sorry. This is not my best showing. Anyway, but they're instantly, and the banter runs deep, and she's kind of interested, but not really. And so that's why I went into the show. I'm like, oh my God, are they going to be a thing or not? It's a really good introduction to them. It's also just a great read, and it really gets you into the mind of Kanan, aka Caleb Doom. And it begins, and it does have payoffs, not immediately in Rebels, but later. So if you're starting Rebels for the first time, or even going back and rewatching for the full Rebels experience, I personally cannot recommend enough A New Dawn, again, by John Jackson Miller, and that's going to do it for this segment.
Dear Mr. Dashwood, enclosed are the first few chapters of a piece I've only begun working on.
And now, Captain's Corner.
I haven't had my muffin yet, Matt.
Hey! Everybody,
really making up for lost time.
And welcome everybody to this week's Captain's Corner. Another beautiful day in the corner. I don't know if you looked outside your rear window, but it's real nice out there in space today. Yeah. Anyway, so what we're talking about today, Captain Corner, we are talking about. You guys hear about this TikTok? Hear about the TikTok? What all the kids are into
with the thing? Yeah, no, I'm on. I do TikTok. Yeah,
you do the
get
TikTok.
Off my lawn.
You do
TikToks.
I use the TikTok.
I use
do
the
you?
TikTok.
You both have TikToks.
I don't make TikToks. I watch TikToks.
Yeah, I watch TikToks. I might have tried them.
Do you have to have it to watch them?
Yes.
Yes.
It's pretty much like Vine, right?
It is.
Wow, am I? I am the oldest man that's ever existed right now. It's kind of like that Vine, right?
Anyway. At least you know what Vine is.
I was on Vine. I made some Vines. I made some quality Vines.
The videos can be longer. They can be different. Like all that stuff. Yeah. Anyway,
that's my issue with Vine.
But did you do it for the Vine, Brian? Were you doing it for the Vine back in the day? No.
No, okay. My Vines were stupid, if you can believe it.
Well, anyway, like Caitlin's saying, it's a very creative platform. If you haven't used it, and Brian, I think you should check it out. I mean, like, people could do some really amazing things with TikTok. In fact, it's actually...
Are you going to talk about the kid with the impressions?
Well, yeah, but he's just one thing I'm going to say. Because the kid with the impressions, there's this user at FunkLordVader, who I think a fantastic name. He does like really funny Star Wars impressions,
yeah,
but he's
man.
Actually not like at the top of the Star Wars TikTok crop. You know, yeah. When I first started looking at TikTok, I fell down a hole where I was watching a lot of Star Wars TikToks. And
I thought you meant a literal hole in the street. I was like, I'm not surprised.
Well, how do you think I watched all those TikToks? I had a lot of time to kill.
You were
in the hole. So, the way the algorithm works on TikTok is like the more content you watch, the more it super serves you that same type of content. So now
the algorithm
it's strong. It's the
That's
force
insidious.
Is strong. But now all I see is Star Wars TikToks. I've been trying to watch other videos to break the algorithm. I can't. So it's all Star Wars. And I got to say, a lot of entertaining stuff out there.
Really?
So you're pretty much, so this segment is pretty much just you advertising for TikTok?
No, because also I hear TikTok's really bad. And like steals your stuff, so you got to be careful, you know.
Talk steals your stuff.
Yeah.
Apparently, it's like a data thing.
So what is the point of it? It's hey, get on. You had me all ready to get on TikTok, and now I'm ready to get off.
No. So,
which is it?
Listen, Job of the Pod or Sci-Fi Wire does not advocate the use of TikTok in any form. Let's just say this is a editorial warning from Captain's Corner. But what I'm going to say is we warned you. What I'm going to say is you go on TikTok, you search Star Wars, and basically people are taking a lot of Star Wars sound bites and turning them into very creative Star Wars funny comedy.
Yeah.
Don't the best TikToks always end up on Twitter, though?
Yeah.
Yeah, they do.
So why do I need TikTok?
Because that's the thing, because there's like a whole, there's so many TikToks that like there's diamonds in the rough out there, you know? As they say, I mean, to keep on Aladdin's theme.
I'm an important guy, you know? I've got a lot of information that I can't get out there. I can't have my stuff stolen, man.
I mean, yeah. Well, then there it is. I just got to wait for them to blow up on Twitter. But
except yep. I'm not, and maybe I will join TikTok right now.
So here's a challenge. Here's a challenge for the users. Yeah, here's a challenge for the users. Anyone that is already on TikTok, we would love to see some Job of the Pod inspired TikToks, and I'd like them posted to Twitter so Mr. Silliman could see them.
Yeah.
There we go.
You had me ready to join TikTok.
Toctic.
That's fun.
I'm never going to say it right. I'm making it a point to never say it correctly. All right. Well, I'm going to join the TikTok. So what do you friend people on TikTok or?
You can, but it doesn't matter.
Them.
Yeah, you can follow them.
You can follow them. So if
the
I go on there,
so
I can follow Matt Romano on TikTok.
Yeah, but ask Caitlin, like you were saying.
Well, the algorithm is so strong that as you scroll through, it kind of learns what you like and it starts serving you that stuff. So obviously Matt watched a ton of Star Wars stuff at first. And now it just like, it's like, you really like Star Wars.
It's like you only, it's
so what if
Star
I go
Wars.
On and I'm like, I'm just going to watch only TikToks about John Adams. It'll
like
just
all the TikToks that I have. All the TikToks that I have are Star Wars, D&D, animal related, mostly frogs. There's a really good seagull TikTok right now that I'm into.
How did Captain's Corner become this?
Because
you guys
Corner
explaining TikTok
it's whatever
to me.
Matt wants it to be.
It's whatever
I
want it to be.
TikTok was that character in Return to Oz. Is that also true?
Sure.
Maybe.
The spinning robot with the pail?
Yeah.
In your world, maybe.
Yeah. But this is general observation on Star Wars. TikTok. Thank you.
Pox on whoever created the segment Captain's Corner.
That would be you.
I know.
And thank you, everybody, for coming by the corner. See you
all
next
right,
time.
All right, cut it. That's it. That's the end. Now it's time for the Jedi Master to introduce our next segment.
This is Obi-Wan Kenobi, and now it's time for Caitlin's Word of the Week.
Thank you, Master Obi-Wan. The Word of the Week is Calabast.
Good job, Caitlin. She seems to be on top of things.
Perfect.
Yeah, it's a good one. I'm going to say it all the time now. Carabast. It's great when, slight spoiler, other characters start saying it too. So that's going to take us to real talk.
I'm looking forward to having some real talk with some real folks.
Not a lot of real talk this week. I want to give a nice shout out to on Twitter, not TickTick. I'm playing dumb a little bit.
Wow, geez,
really.
Yeah, okay.
User Mark Hector tweeted at all of us 5 days ago and said, "It's official. You are my happy place." # Job of the Pod.
Aww.
I thought that was very nice. I'm like, yeah. If we're your happy place, also, it's like may the force be with you then. Very nice thing to say. Also, everybody has just been in general very nice in the comments and everything else. Looking forward to our season, and I hope we're delivering. And let me just say that this episode is not indicative of the rest of our season. Although, let's be honest. Probably will be.
A little bit.
The show has gotten long. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear that. Look, it's you want it to be longer? Do you want it to be even longer?
I know you're capable of it. I don't want to push this.
Okay, said Kanan Tejera. Okay.
No, but we got to find our legs, you know, when we do these big season deep dives, you know? It gives us a thing.
It's true. Too.
My legs are feeling just fine.
Always. Yeah.
I feel like I'm under attack right now. It's okay for me to say it, but don't you do it, John Murray. Okay, with that, we're going to ship this episode off to Tarkin Town, but join us next week where we'll continue our journey with Star Wars Rebels.
You're Rebels, aren't you?
And we'll be talking everything and anything else to do with the rest of Season 1 with special focus on the episode. Well, you'll find out when we get there, but it probably won't be a shock if you've already seen it. We'll also be having more fun with everything and anything in the galaxy far, far away, as well as more fun with Tick Tick. In the meantime, feel free to reach out to us on social media if you so choose. Caitlin Bush, you can be found where?
I can be found at Caitlin M. Bush. That is C-A-I-T-L-I-N M. Bush like the beer, not like the presidents.
Wow, that was said with a little bit of shade. I just caught it's a shady over here. Matt Romano, you can be found where?
You can find me at Matt Romano on Twitter, M-A-T-T-R-O-M-A-N-O.
And I can be found on Twitter at Brian Silliman. That's at B-R-I-A-N-S as in Sky Guy, I-L-L-I-M-A-N. Search out with your feelings and share your thoughts and don't lose your leg. We love hearing from you. Subscribe, leave a comment, and give 5 stars if you're feeling generous. Snoke 'em if you got 'em, take it Sheevy. And remember, hope is like the sun. If you only believe in it when you can see it, you'll never make it through the night. Carabast, this is the way we have spoken. The Force will be with you always. Be the spark.
This will be best of all year.